He was about a year old when he arrived, and we believe he came from French Cameroon, but no one can be absolutely certain.
He was a very well-known character, celebrity, really.
He was brought by a Mr. Fuchs, and he arrived on November the 5th, so I don't think there was any doubt what he was going to be called.
His name was Guy, and he was a baby gorilla, who for the rest of his life would draw crowds to London Zoo. When he died in 1978, a huge and quite overweight adult, his skin was sent to the Natural History Museum to be made immortal.
I'm Richard Sabin. I'm collection manager for the Vertebrates Group in the Department of Life Sciences at the Natural History Museum. Guy is one of our celebrity specimens. It's a specimen that basically has a name, a history, and a high public profile. So we thought it was about time to get Guy back on display again in the public galleries.
He's sitting down in what looks like quite a relaxed pose, a sort of casual gaze to his left. Mm. Is that quite a natural pose for a silverback?
Yeah. I mean, this is the sort of position that you'd find the dominant male in the wild. He would be set slightly apart from the group. But he has a very expressive face. And the thing about primates is there's a lot, and it's the same with humans, it's as much about non-verbal communication. It's visual signals, visual signs. You have to stand your ground, you have to look imposing. He is all those things, and of course the most classic sign of his dominance is the silver back that he has. He's a perfect example. But, you know, the whole look of Guy, the massive, powerful arms, the power is there in the forearms and in the chest. I mean, those massive, massive chest muscles. And also in the muscles in the back, you know. He has, or would have had, if he'd been in slightly better condition, the physique of a top weightlifter, effectively. But when you consider his history, he was brought to London in 1947, was at the London Zoo and died in 1978. He was over 35 years old, you know, and this taxidermy mount that we have of Guy, I mean, it's a wonderful example of the taxidermy art. When you compare this specimen to other gorillas that were mounted maybe in the late Victorian period, they're worlds apart. I mean, there's so much reference, television, photographic reference to Guy. The team that worked on him were able to recreate him as close to he was in life as possible. So, yeah, I mean, that expression that you can see, I mean, that really makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town. And be just like the other men. I'm tired of Morgan.
No one forgot seeing Guy in his city pad, and he had many fans. But he lived alone, with only the keepers as family. One of them was Mick Carman.
I remember my very first day working with Guy. I was told to go into his outside enclosure to clean it. And the old keepers, they were a naughty lot, really. They always liked the new apprentice to get a bit of a shock. And, of course, they hadn't warned me that Guy's favourite trick when you went into the outside cage was to wait till you were right next to the slide and he would kick it with all his might, yeah, which would make an enormous banging noise and frighten the life out of you.
And is that what he did?
And he did. He got it exactly right the very first day, and it frightened the life out of me. But, you know, I realised after a few days of working with him that primates were the animals I wanted to work with for the rest of my life.
I want to be like you. I want to walk like you. Talk like you. You see it's true. An ape like me. Can learn to be human too.
Guy mania broke out in the 50s and 60s. And regular zoo visitors, like George Fitt, were allowed to feed Guy.
It was Guy the gorilla what brought us to the zoo. He was such a lovely character. He was such a big guy.
So did you hear about him and just think, right, I want to go
no,
and have a look
on
at one
the
of
news.
Those?
London Zoo's got a gorilla. We say, what's a gorilla? Big monkey, great big monkey.
Right.
That's what it was. He's just come and see him. A week ago was when the keepers invited us. Look, bring your food in, George, and you feed him inside.
So did you come every day?
No, not every day. Weekdays, I suppose, about 3 or 4 days a week. Yeah, where are you going, George? To the zoo. All right, here's some food for you. And madness there it was.
Did you see him as having a, you know, just having a personality like a human has a personality?
Yeah, as far as we knew, he was a human to us.
You see it's true, shoo-bidi-doo, an ape like me, scooby-dooby-dooby, can learn to be human too.
Yeah, Guy was incredibly popular with the public, mainly because there wasn't television particularly in those days, so people didn't know what gorillas looked like. He was the first one in the United Kingdom to become a silverback. In those days, gorillas didn't live very long. You see, this was the thing. People had never seen an animal as big as Guy. I mean, Guy was, you know, huge, and they get that silverback. They are fantastic-looking animals. And the public would come and just stare at him in amazement. He would run to one end and he'd growl and grumble, because gorillas, they make a beautiful sort of noise when they're happy.
Right.
And he would do that, and then he'd run to the other end and do it again. And he was just such a fantastic character. His enclosure, there were lots and lots of greenfinches, as I remember as a kid. And yes, Guy occasionally he would just catch them, and he would just hold them for a while and then let them go.
He was a character, and I think the guys who actually recreated the taxidermy mount wanted to show that character in his face, and I think they've done it terribly well.
I went to the workshop of Derek Frampton, a freelance taxidermist, who early in his career worked to capture Guy's spirit forever in a museum specimen.
Okay, Vicky, this is the tannin drum. You let it run for several hours until the skin becomes nice and soft.
Turning quite slowly.
Yes, you don't want it, because what you want the skin to do is to basically gradually go up, then fall in different positions, then it softens it.
And it was you who stuffed Guy, wasn't it?
Yes, I worked. I worked on Guy the gorilla with three other people. The skin was put into a freezer, and it was left in the freezer for several years until I went to the museum. And being frozen for so long, it had a chemical reaction, and it had turned the skin to like very, very hard, hardboard, basically. That was a challenge, and we actually spent quite a few months working on the skin, and we had problems with him. We could never get the skin to meet at the back because he had shrunk so much, you see. So we either made a thin Guy,
the suit didn't fit,
yeah, or we had a gap down the back. So it was decided we'd keep to the original measurements, and we'd just have to patch the back up.
Oh, so he doesn't meet around the back?
He doesn't meet round
the back. When he died, he was examined at post-mortem. Sections of his anatomy were sent to various organisations, institutions around the UK. His skeleton was prepared. It was clean, so we could look at the dental pathology that he had. We could also look at the other effects of captivity on his skeleton, so things like arthritis in his hip joints and so on. When you know an animal's life history, when you know its diet, when you know how it's been treated and its behaviour on a daily basis, you can learn an awful lot about the sorts of conditions that the animal develops. And, you know, these are the things that led to a change in the way that these large primates are held in captive breeding programmes in captivity now.
We used to allow feeding many, many years ago at the zoo, and that was banned very, you know, long, long time ago. But due to this public feeding, Guy got bad teeth, and he had to have a dentist come and remove some of his teeth. And unfortunately, he didn't recover from the anaesthetic. I was one of the keepers on duty the day he died. It all went well. His teeth were removed. Everything seemed fine. Yeah, he was recovering, and he collapsed. And he'd had a heart attack. Whether that was brought on by the anaesthetic, no one will ever really know, but he died.
And they couldn't resuscitate
him? No, I mean, it's very difficult to go in with a gorilla and try and resuscitate, because if you do resuscitate them and you're in there, you know, the gorilla's not going to be too pleased either. But no, unfortunately, we knew he was dead at that point. Very sad, very sad. Mm-hmm. To us, as a keeper, their family.
It's quite emotional thinking about it now.
It is, actually. It's giving me goosebumps thinking about it. And it wasn't just the keepers that worked with him, it was the public. It made front pages of all the major newspapers, and all the other keepers in the zoo were coming round and saying, you know, sorry. I mean, you work with an animal those years. It's you know, you do get very emotionally attached to them. But Guy just had something about him. He had such a lovely face, beautiful animal.
When Guy has been in storage, we've got letters from people asking where he is and when he's going to go back on display. He's a treasure for a lot of different reasons. Scientifically, we're still learning about how his life in captivity affected him and you know, the visual signs in his skeleton. But he's also a treasure culturally, and how people responded and changed their attitude to the way that animals are held in zoos. Mm-hmm. These are, you know, amongst our closest relatives, and they do think potentially and feel definitely in the same way that we do.
To meet Guy for yourself and to see other unforgettable icons that expanded our knowledge of the natural world, visit the Treasures Gallery at the Natural History Museum.